Now, Stigma of Mental Illness Radio on CosmicBroadcasting.com and the Cosmic Broadcasting app.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so clean about that face.
Joining me today, you're listening to the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio. And my name is Chrissy Hodges, and I'm your host. We are headed into the Christmas week, which I am pretty happy that this time of year is here, because that means that this year is almost over. I was just having a conversation with my guest before we got into this, just talking about how 2014, goodbye, thanks for nothing. It's just been one of those years. But I'm excited to move forward in 2015. There are a lot of wonderful things happening. And just to share a very wonderful piece of news that we just found out in the great state of Colorado. Colorado will be receiving a $65 million mental health grant. Finally! Colorado has been lagging in our ability to catch up with the rest of the United States and probably the rest of the world to be able to offer people support and the right means of care for mental health. And this is so exciting for us. We have limited space for people that need help. We have limited funds to train people on how to treat people who have mental health issues. So I'm super excited about this. I think this is a great step forward for Colorado and for everyone. I think that we're finally taking a solid look at mental health and what mental health means to people. This has been an interesting week for news. And speaking of, a couple weeks ago, I talked a little bit about what was going on, the unrest in the country. And it seems like the unrest in our country just seems to be getting worse and worse as people are speaking out, regardless of other people's feelings. And mental health news, Ann Coulter decided to say that this week that basically less than 1% of college students are the victim of sexual assault, and that sexual assault and rape really doesn't happen on college campuses. Now, Ann Coulter, you know, I could ask her to come on the show, but oh, that's right. My show is about people who live successfully with mental illness. Can't we just be nice? I mean, we've got things going on in our country right now. We've got all kinds of controversy, and you get online and people are just bashing other people, calling people idiots because they believe something, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're moving into Christmas. We're moving into 2015. I really hope that we can be thankful for the things that we have, thankful that our country is in a place that we are now versus where we were 5 years ago, and that we are moving forward in a positive direction. And I said that about the Ann Coulter thing because, again, that is something that unless you have been in the person's shoes when it comes to rape and things that have happened to other people, you have no idea what it means to be there, just like mental illness. And moving into or segueing into introducing my guest, we are going to talk today about borderline personality disorder. Now, I'm going to tell you that there is no other mental illness that I get more irritated about that's used as an adjective than OCD, than borderline. And the reason why is because it's an easy way for people to say, oh yeah, my ex was just crazy. They were so borderline. And that drives me nuts. First of all, I didn't even know what borderline was until a couple years ago when I started all this advocacy. So when you take someone's word, you think that people who have personality disorders are just nuts. That's because they don't know what personality disorders are about either. And the more I have found out and the more people that I have talked to and learned about personality disorders, the more I realized that everything I knew before was completely wrong and I was completely misread. So I hope that you learn a lot about personality disorders today from my guest, Mr. Chris McCulloch-Young. He has a very long introduction. I do like it, but I kind of don't want to read the whole thing because I feel like there won't be anything left to talk about.
All right. Not true. Okay.
Well. I'm going to give you the basics.
Sure, it's your show. You do what you want.
And then I'm going to let him fill in the blanks. Chris has been on my show. He was on my show a while back, a very long time ago, I believe, Chris. And I found him on the web somehow. I don't remember. I read an article or something about him. But Chris has been walking around the UK talking about mental illness. And in a way to break down the stigma, he's got all kinds of great things that are happening and that have been happening. And he is just one of those go-getters. I'm going to put myself out there and show the world what mental illness really is. I hope that introduction was good enough, Chris.
Sorry, who are you talking about? Yes, that's lovely. Hi, Chrissy. It's lovely to be on your show again. Do you know,
I love having accents on here.
Hey, I don't have an accent. You do. I think it was a year ago that we spoke. I think it was a year ago. It might have been a bit more, but not much more.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I learned so much the first time around about borderline. You were one of the first people that I had ever met who had borderline personality disorder. Mm. And so I remember during the actual interview sitting here thinking, holy moly, I know nothing. I was scared to ask you questions.
No. Well, it is one of those things. Name one person, one famous person with borderline personality disorder who's still alive.
Should I know this?
No, you shouldn't, because nobody comes forward. Nobody famous comes forward and says, hey, I've got borderline personality disorder. Because the stigma around it is absolutely horrific.
Well, then, you know what, Chris? Before we get into your story, tell us what it is. Tell us.
Borderline personality disorder, I think you can only talk about it in... I can only talk about it in my context, because for a number of different people, it's a number of different things. It's a bit like saying, what's cancer? Borderline personality disorder comes under a big umbrella. It's usually born out of an abusive childhood, or a childhood that involved neglect or trauma. And it involves people developing avoidant behaviors, and avoidant behaviors include, and I think in most of the people I've spoken to with borderline personality disorder, they want to get on with folk. They're real people pleasers, and the real danger with being a real people pleaser is you can just that can become all you are. And you gradually lose yourself. You become this kind of chameleon. And I'm in therapy, I describe myself as a whore. I'll be anything you want me to be. and by doing that, it takes away an awful lot of stress in your life, because you're everything everybody wants you to be. I think often people with borderline personality disorder can be quite popular because of their behavior, but just to give you an example of it, how it really stood out for me. I was in therapy. I'd been in group psychotherapy for probably about a year, and we'd been talking, and the therapist just said stop, and we did, and she said, Chris, have you noticed something here? I said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. She said, right, so-and-so is completely disagreeing with so-and-so, and yet you've somehow managed to agree with them both. I think I have, haven't I? And that's what it is. But what happens, you know, with this kind of, you know, you build all this up inside you. You become other people for other people. It builds resentment. It builds discomfort. It builds up dissonance inside yourself. Instead of, you know, expressing yourself properly in situations, what can happen is one can resort to self-harm. After my mum died when I was 12, and I was we experienced neglect because my dad became an alcoholic, and I was also sexually abused around about that time. And I, you know, all the time I'm terrified of going into care, because I didn't even know what care was, but I didn't want to go into it. So I was always pleasing people and saying everything's great, everything's fine. And yet I'd go home and I'd self-harm. Now, at the time, I'd never heard of self-harming. I thought I didn't know that such a thing existed. So I thought, goodness, you know, all this has happened to me, and I must be really crazy for doing this crazy thing. It somehow gave me something. It made me feel. But yeah, just going back to it, it is very difficult to say, you know, what a typical person with a borderline personality disorder is or was. As a group of people, we are, depending on what papers you read, we are between 1,000 and 10,000 times more likely to take our own lives because of that kind of internal suffering battle thing that goes on inside us. I think although I still get suicidal ideation, you know, I've reached the ripe old age of nearly 50, and I know that period of absolute horrible pain. I mean, borderline personality disorder is an absolute pain. It's horrible. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't describe it in any other way. But so I still experience that suicidal ideation. I still think of it as an option. Mm-hmm. I often liken it to a friend of mine who was phobic about hospitals, and yet his wife was pregnant and they were going to have their child. So they thought we have to sort of do something. You know, you want to be there at the birth, but yet you're terrified of hospitals. What are we going to do? And the consultant was really smart. He took him into the ward the maternity ward, and he walked him out of the hospital from there. He went through one door, the next door, the next door. He said, see, there is a direct way out. And that's what I feel about suicidal ideation. I don't think it's what a lot of people actually want. I think, but they want to see a way out. Mm-hmm. And when I think of suicidal ideation, actually, it makes me feel slightly better. So it sounds ridiculous, but it makes me feel slightly better that I have an exit. Mm-hmm. This year for me, just hopping about a bit, my main symptom now after all this time is dissociation. And dissociation is an experience that people will often get if they're in shock. Mm-hmm. It's when you become disembodied. You get to the point where you think, you know, the world isn't quite real. Or in my case, I think the world isn't real. So it's a very strange world, because cognitively, you know, the world is real. But emotionally, your body's you're saying to yourself, look, the world can't be real. It doesn't feel real. It doesn't look real. I can't experience the world as real. If I touch things, they feel really strange and alien. A good example for this is, say, with lovely Ella, my partner, who's been an absolute superb support all the way through this. Mm-hmm. Normally, I'm a cuddly kind of guy, and, you know, I'm very tactile. When I'm dissociating, I can put my hand on her and she feels like a lump of meat. You know, there's that little connection. She actually feels that foreign. Huh. And that's the, you know, just a horribly weird situation for me to be in. And thankfully, over the years, she's learned that you know, not to take this personally, because this is just a phase, a period of time that I go through. It can last anything between, I think the shortest period of dissociation has lasted for me is about an hour, and the longest has maybe been 4 weeks.
Now, do you know when you're disassociating?
And right.
Do you accept it?
Well, I've kind of learnt, looking back over the years, I've lost months, and for a long, long time, I was misdiagnosed by my GP with depression, and my GP just kept on pumping me full of more and more venlafaxine until he was giving me 1.5 times the maximum dose. And then after a year, I came back and he said, "I thought you were better. I haven't seen you for months." And I said, I didn't know where I was, because it's just an incredibly large dose. So for a long time, I didn't know this is what I was doing. And for a long time, I thought people were acting differently towards me, when actually it was me being different towards other people. That I was suddenly this different person, this thing that couldn't experience emotion, couldn't experience joy, couldn't experience any kind of feelings. My visual perception became peculiar. Stairs became a problem. I couldn't quite put a finger on that. I'd appear places. I'd go to work and think I was working, only to find I hadn't done anything. Mm-hmm. With discussion, I've found out that this is what goes on for me. And sometimes it's obvious when I go into it. Ella tends to spot it more than me.
Right.
By talking to her on the phone, I normally, when I'm out walking, she'll speak to me 3 times a day usually. And she'll say, "You sound a bit distant," or "Have you dissociated?" And usually she's absolutely on the money. She's usually bang on. The last time I dissociated was it was a week ago, and Ella, we were going somewhere. We made plans. We were going to do something. We were visiting friends, and I put some things in the car, and I came back, and she just looked at me and she went, "You dissociated, haven't you?" And it's just that feeling of the world just isn't there anymore. So what I do now is I accept it. Say if I've been dissociating for, say, a month, I start having very peculiar thoughts, because once you've experienced the world as a very distant place for that period of time, I start having peculiar thoughts. I think, if the world isn't real, if the people aren't real, if nothing is real, then maybe I'm an omnipotent creature. Maybe I am a Jesus-like character. Mm-hmm. And I always remember Ella saying, "You're not Jesus. Get yourself into bed and breakfast. I'll be up tomorrow." Okay, but the other funny thing is I don't believe in God, you tie that in circles. I don't believe in myself.
I've noticed that a lot of people who have hallucinations, visuals, or now dissociate, Jesus always comes to mind. What's up with that?
I don't know. It's just he's my head honcho. He's my go-to guy when I think of an omnipotent. That's the world I grew up. I grew up as in Protestant England, and that's maybe I'm just hardwired to think right. He's my first go-to omnipotent guy.
Jesus was dissociating.
Maybe he's some. I went off for 40 days and 40 nights. That's kind of what it feels like. So it is. So this year has not been a very good year for me. I've been dissociating like it's been going out of fashion. I've had a number of times trying to get back on the road, and failing. I hate to use the word failing, but that's what it's felt like to me. I've gone and back to I've been walking in North Wales, and I start walking, and the first day's fine, second day's fine, and then suddenly I'm dissociating again, and it's, you know, at, you know, Ella's on the phone and she has to come and pick me up. It's a sort of round trip of about 600 miles, and you know, it just becomes wearisome. And then you build yourself up and try and get back on. So I had three big failures, and it was very difficult because the wind was out of my sails. You know, I think when I first started this walk, I was the king of the world, and I believed that it was going to be a success. And as I do today, I believe that walking a mile in my shoes is a great thing to be doing, and I will complete this. And you know, I'll and there'll be a film at the end of it, and yeah, I'll be a better person, a happier person for completing it.
Mm-hmm. Walking a mile in your shoes,
yeah,
means that you are going to have those months. Just personally, I would prefer the word setback rather than failure.
Yeah, let's go for setback. Yeah,
those are your shoes.
But
and
at
that's
the time,
what you have to go through.
At the time, it feels like failure. Today, it feels like a setback. You know, it's hard, but now I'm. Should I talk a bit about how I got to the idea of walk a mile in my shoes?
Yes, please.
I was at work, and what had happened was I'd been weird, and I'd been going into work and coming home from work, and then finally one of my colleagues came into my office and said, "Chris, what are you doing?" You know, I was a manager. And I was a good manager. And this chap comes in and he says, "Chris, you haven't done anything for days. You know, normally I had my office door open so that people could come in and they could chat to me, because I think the worst thing about being a social worker is if your manager's got a shut door, because then where do you go with all the stress? So I always had an open door policy until, you know, towards the end of my career. And I had this lock. I had my door shut, and this guy comes crashing in. And he said, "Chris, what are you doing? You know, nothing's happening." And I said, and he tells me that I said to him, "I don't know who I am."
Oh.
And he said, "I think you need some help." So, and that's what kind of started the ball rolling. So, my GP, my general practitioner, my family doctor, he pointed me in the direction of a psychiatrist. I saw a psychiatrist who then assessed me over a period of months. She I've got a degree in psychology, so she treated me not quite as a peer, but she was quite generous with our chats. And she said, at the end of one session, she said, "So Chris, what do you think you've got? That's your homework. That's your homework. Go away and tell me what you think you've got." So I came back, and having my degree in psychology, I thought, yeah, what I've got is some kind of dissociative disorder. And that's what I came back with. And she said, "No, I'm afraid not." She said, "You have all the hallmarks of borderline personality disorder." Now, going back to the earlier part of our conversation, nobody famous has borderline personality disorder because of all the stigma attached to it. Now, as a social worker and after doing my degree in psychology, I'd always been told it was a dustbin diagnosis. It was the diagnosis that they gave people when they didn't know what they had.
Dustbin?
Dustbin, yeah.
Okay.
Trash can.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
And basically there was no cure, there was no treatment. Basically you get this diagnosis and you're doomed. All services, social work, psychiatry, you know, mental health nurses, they're going to treat you with suspicion at best, because at the back of their mind, they know there's no cure for it. No matter what they do with you, you know, you go into a job like social work or psychiatry or mental health nursing, you want to make people feel better. And if you're doing your usual magic and, you know, working with somebody with a borderline personality disorder, say, and they're not getting better, and people have got better before when you've worked with them, then it must be their fault. So right. There's an awful lot of people who say that borderline personality disorder people with BPD are treatment resistant.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of blaming themselves for not quite taking the time to get to know the person and really look at the situation and work out where all this avoidant behavior is coming from, and instead of looking at that, they just blame the person for not getting better. It's a bit like saying somebody's got cancer and you've treated them with all the bits you've got and they're still dying, and you say, well, you're resistant to treatment. You know, what are you doing? You know, you're not helping mm-hmm. at all. So,
well, we started this conversation with the, and I understand this because OCD is the same way with a big umbrella. But
sure.
The borderline has a big umbrella, and every person is different, and every person is unique inside of it. But what is it? What are the primary reasons why people believe borderline is untreatable?
Because I think for a while it was. I think people didn't respond well to things like cognitive behavioral therapy, mm-hmm. which is very popular here in the UK. I think the government would have it as a cure for everything, but people don't respond to that. People with borderline personality disorder don't respond well to just straightforward counselling. I was very fortunate. I had open-ended group psychotherapy, and that allowed me to completely explore myself and take the time and find out who I was. I'd always, at the beginning of group psychotherapy, I spoke to the guy assessing me to whether what kind of therapy I was going to get, and he said, yeah, group psychotherapy is going to be best for you. And I said, but I want my own therapist. I don't want to share a therapist. And he said, well, think about it. If you're having therapy with just one therapist, you're looking in one mirror. If you're having therapy with lots of people, you're looking in many mirrors. And I thought, God, that sounds just right up my street. And it was great. I did go into it thinking I want to be cured. And in an ideal world, you know, I would like to be cured.
Don't we all?
But you know, that ain't going to happen. But what I did realize is that, you know, it's manageable,
mm-hmm.
and as long as you accept it, it is manageable. You can get through your time with it. But you know, there are a few treatments around now. There's dialectical behavioral therapy mm-hmm. by Marcia Linen. Now, again, what's happened with this is it was a pretty good attempt, and I think it helped a lot of people with borderline personality disorder. But when people don't respond to that, then they're seen as being resistant to treatment. And there's another thing called mentalization, and ditto. You know, if people don't get better from it, it's their fault. You know, there's a feeling of blaming the person, and it is a complicated thing. And if you think it's a condition that's almost based on dishonesty, because you're so afraid
yep.
to engage in really anything that's going to cause you upset, because you know that upset is horribly uncomfortable. It may cause you to dissociate. It may lead to suicidal ideation. It may lead to self-harming. You know, so that avoidant behavior, you know, is is part and parcel of it, and you use it. And it took me a long time just to accept it and say, right, this is you know, it's a huge problem. Dissociation is a big problem. What also sometimes my dissociation mixes in with hallucinations, auditory and visual. I remember my first visual hallucination was way back when I was 13. A friend of mine, we were playing hide and seek, and me and my friend Gary, we were hiding, and I was looking at him, and suddenly he grew my mother's head in front of me. I remember him saying, What's wrong? I couldn't tell him.
I would keep that to myself.
but you are currently sporting my mother's head. And so I've had these hallucinations all through my life. My latest hallucination, and I accept them. You know, I know when things aren't real. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with trilobites. They're one of the first creatures that came out of the sea in millions and millions of years ago. And that was my latest hallucination. I saw them walking across Ella's living room. What they were doing there, where they were going, no idea. So, but it's just one of those things. And now I'm able to sort of laugh about it and think, yeah, that's ridiculous. You know, if you're going to have hallucinations, you know, try and make them at least a bit realistic. So,
well, I think that's one of the pieces that I want to talk about when we come back from the commercial. A few of the things that you said right in that last passage, just about accepting it and just the dishonesty about the disorder, which I that piece of it, I really want to get into when we get back.
Sure. Okay.
But we do need to take a couple minute break. And to my listeners, thank you for tuning in. Chris, we'll be back in just a moment. We're going to talk to him more about his life with borderline personality disorder, as well as all the wonderful things he's going to be doing in 2015. Stick with us. We'll see you in just a few minutes.
Speak soon.
Don't miss BizTalk with Claire Billingsley Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. Claire talks with people who have taken their own dreams and passions and worked them into a business adventure, helping other people do the same. The message is not only empowering, but genuinely motivating. That's BizTalk at 11 a.m. Eastern Tuesdays. You're listening to Cosmic Broadcasting.
Radio without limits. Cosmic Broadcasting.
Hey guys, this is Lynn Williams of Cosmic Broadcasting, and if you've ever had an issue with a computer or a computer system, you know how frustrating those things can be. I just had the pleasure of talking with Michael Clark of MRC Technology, and I come away from the meeting thinking that this is the guy that can do it all. Runs a company that specializes in network and computer support, can work on most computer system issues, has over 30 years of experience in the field. Anything from virus cleanup, firewalls, security, web and email hosting, even workstation and server maintenance. This guy can get the job done for you. Windows, Mac, or Linux, you can count on them to do whatever it takes to resolve your issues. Do yourself a favor and get in contact with MRC Technology. 5050 Edison Avenue, Suite 111, right down the hall from Cosmic Broadcasting. Michael Clark, MRC Technologies. Give him a call at 719-362-0710 or check out the web at www.mrct.com.
Hey world, it's on. That's right. Make sure you follow Action Radio on Twitter at Heat975Action and Facebook, facebook.com/actionradio.live. But more importantly, tune in every Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m. to Action Radio with your host, Jazzy Jazz.
Range Auto Glass will beat any price quote and uses only top-notch OEM glass. Glass Tech Travis has over 15 years' experience and is mobile, so you don't have to change your day to change your windshield. Front Range Auto Glass gives you a lifetime guarantee on labor and all auto glass without an impact point. Call to schedule your appointments on 330-3205. That's 330-3205. Or leave a note on facebook.com/Front Range Auto Glass. A tiny chip in your windshield could quickly lead to a complete cracked windshield, so don't delay and replace it today. Broken windshield? No worries. Front Range Auto Glass won't break your budget.
When it comes to harvesting deals, Garden of the Goods Marketplace has a fresh variety of things to save up to 50%. From travel to
lots of fun and food. Sign up on csindy.com to receive $5 off. Garden of the Goods Marketplace. Homegrown savings.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio. My name is Chrissy Hodges, and I'm your host. If you're looking to support a good cause for mental illness, if you are looking to get involved and you don't know how, why not become a patron of the Stigma of Mental Illness Radio? This show is entirely listener-supported, and what that means is that you have the ability to pledge per show as little as a dollar per show. That way it ensures that the show stays on. It sure ensures that we have awesome guests from here in Colorado all the way over in the UK, like today with Chris Young. What you can do is visit www.patreon.com/thestigmaofmentalillnessradio. That's patreon.com/thestigmaofmentalillnessradio. What we're doing here is we are creating a platform, giving people the opportunity to hear real stories. And the perfect example is today when we're talking about borderline personality disorder. I shared earlier in the show that this is one of the disorders that I had no idea what it was about until I get to hear people's stories. Like Chris, I've had a couple of people on the show that have had borderline. And the more I hear about it, the more I realize that I knew nothing. And I was only going by assumptions of what other people knew, and they knew nothing either. That's what the show is about. It's here to dispel stigma and to dispel myths that are not true. I saw a shirt on Facebook the other day that said OCD obsessive cat disorder. And I just wanted to throw my computer across the room. I don't care if you are obsessed with cats. You have no idea what it's like to have OCD. So with that, if you want to pledge, please visit my show or my website at patreon.com/thestigmaofmentalillnessradio. Every dollar is appreciated and keeps us on the air. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, if anybody wants to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Walkermile UK. That's where you'll find me. That's probably the best way to link up with me.
Yes, and his Facebook page, Walk a Mile in My Shoes.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty straightforward. Yeah, that's the best way if people want to join up. Yeah, and it's an open group. Mm-hmm. Just feel free to join up and pitch in, really. We're a real friendly bunch, and I think we're all quite keen to dispel the stigma.
There's a couple things I wanted to start off with, Chris, before we get to all the things that you are doing. And these questions are kind of a spin of what you were talking about before. Now, I just want to kind of spout out what I feel like borderline personality disorder is from what I've learned from you and from other things. So it's a highly heightened emotional disorder in which the sole purpose is to not cause any sort of dissension to anyone.
Yes.
And any sort of dissension causes so much personal trauma and emotion that actually becomes a detriment to yourself. Is that correct?
That's pretty accurate. Somebody I spoke to, it was a consultant. He was talking about that the part of the brain that switches off emotion. You know, most of us have an emotion and it really rears up, and what happens is the brain goes, "Hey, calm down. that's enough now." Well, people with borderline personality disorder often have an undeveloped part of their brain. So once their emotion starts going, there's no telling where it's going to go, and it's that horrible feeling of being out of control. So you will do anything to avoid that because it is so uncomfortable. And what happens?
And so that's when you said earlier, it's a dishonest disorder. And so in that, you would think from the outside world, you would think, well, this person is being dishonest because they just must not love me, or they're just a bad person.
When
in the borderline personality disorder, in the mind, it's actually the opposite.
That's right. It is about, I'd say if you're working with people with borderline personality disorder, is about taking time and gaining trust. And working, you know, there's a thing called, we call it self-stigma. It's this tendency for people with mental health problems to beat themselves up because of a condition of having a mental health problem. I think this is, you know, is huge in people with borderline personality disorder. They just don't want people to know. Mm-hmm. They don't want people, because once they start talking about emotional things, then who knows where that could end up. And treatment should be very gradual. It should be open-ended, like the psychotherapy I was fortunate enough to have. I left that group when I decided I wanted to leave that group. And, you know, we took time for me to leave the group. You know, it wasn't right, Chris, you're cured, bye. It was a real case of, you're planning to leave. You're going to do what? You can leave. But it was them that helped me to decide that I realized that the stigma was still around. I knew I'd been disabled out of my job as a social worker. Mm-hmm. I knew that I had to, as a person, I wanted to fight that stigma. I wanted to make a real noise about mental ill health. And I thought the best way to do it for me was to walk around the edge of the UK, to circumnavigate the whole of the UK and talk about it to the people that I meet.
How do you bring it up? How do you start a conversation about this? I just need to know.
Right. Okay. How bring it up? I'll tell you on the first day of the walk, because what you do is you talk to your friends, and they know that Chris has always been a bit of a nutcase, and walk around the UK. Yeah, that's fine. That we'll just tick that off as another Chris thing to do. Yep, that's the sort of thing he does. So it was okay with friends. I think a lot of people thought, you know, this is crazy, but a couple of friends took me aside and said, right, have you read this book by Satish Kumar? Satish Kumar was a Jain monk in the 1960s, and he wrote a book called No Destination. And in this book, he decided to go on a pilgrimage to visit all the nuclear-owning states in the world. And he went to his guru and said, this is what I'm going to do. And his guru said, so you're going to take lots of money with you. He said, yeah, don't you worry about me. I'll be absolutely fine. He said, you've got nice hotels to stay in. He said, yes, I've booked the first month's worth, so I'll be fine. He said, well, you can forget all that. He said, if you take money with you, you won't feel motivated to speak to people at the end of the day. So you, when you go on this pilgrimage, you'll be taking no money. You'll be relying purely on the hospitality of other people. And this guy started his walk in Pakistan and walked into India. No, sorry, he was walking from India into Pakistan, and when the two countries were at war. And I thought, if he could do that, if he could start a walk believing that he was going to get hospitality from his essential enemy, I thought I could walk around the edge of the UK with no money whatsoever. So it was on my first day that I actually first spouted what I was doing to a woman who got off a bus. I was walking north of Edinburgh. I just walked over the Forth Road Bridge, which is a bit like the Golden Gate Bridge. It's slightly smaller, but it's essentially the same bridge transplanted. This woman got off a bus, and at the time I had a big rucksack on, and I was wearing a kilt, and she looked at me and said, what on earth are you doing? So I just babbled. I said, right, well, what happened was I was a social worker, and I became mentally ill, and I decided that, you know, I couldn't go back to social work because it's going to make me nuts, so I'm going to do something that's going to be completely different. So I've decided to walk around the edge of the UK and rely purely on other people for hospitality and care, and I believe the world will look after me. And she looked at me and she said, right, okay. She said, you can't stay with me tonight because my husband my husband isn't home. It was great that we were actually having that conversation. You know, maybe I could stay with you, this person you've never met before in your whole life. And she said, but here's £10. There's a restaurant down in the village. Go and get yourself some tea. So I went, so, okay. So I walked into this restaurant and said, you know, this is the situation. And a woman in the corner said, keep your money. I'm going to buy you dinner. I'll buy you a pint as well, and I'm going to tell you my story. So I suddenly realised that I was kind of almost a wandering counsellor, yeah, because very often people don't talk to the people that they love and tell them their innermost secrets or worries. They save it up inside themselves, and a complete stranger is an ideal person to offload on. So I found that as I've gone round, you know, that the people have being willing to tell me things that they don't tell their friends. But on the second day in, I had a tent with me. And in Scotland, you've got this wonderful law called the right to roam, which means in Scotland you can walk anywhere. There's no law of trespass. So you can walk anywhere in Scotland. It only becomes a crime if you cause criminal damage. Also, you can stick your tent up anywhere as long as it's 20 meters from a residential home. So it's brilliant. It's a great law. So I was able to hop around. But on my second day, I met a woman who was doing a walk for the Multiple Sclerosis Society. And they were walking roughly in the same direction as me, but they were moving a lot faster because they weren't carrying 20 tons of what if on their back. And they said, I roughly had a, I knew I was going to be meeting up with a guy sort of further along, but it was all a bit vague. And she said, listen, if you've got nowhere to stay today, give us a ring. We'll come and get you. You can come back to our house, have a shower. We'll feed you and send you off on your way. How does that sound? Sounds marvellous. And all the time I'm thinking, this is what I believed would happen. But at the same time, I'm thinking, this is a miracle. This is amazing. You know, what kind of nutter invites some? I look like a bouncer. I look like I look like sort of the big security guy. And she's inviting me into her house. And she took at the end of the day, I was really exhausted. And she invited me. They picked me up in the car, brought me back to their house, where she's got a son who was 2 years old at the time, and her partner, and. You know, it was just lovely. And I was saying, what on earth made you trust somebody like this? And she said, well, you know, I trust my own first impressions of folk. And that was all lovely. And then the next day we read on Facebook, she said, if I'm murdered in my sleep tonight, this is the guy that did it. So we laughed about that. But yeah. But that's kind of the way it's gone. It's been a lovely story, you know, in amongst all my looniness, you know, and I'm very open about my mental health problems, sometimes a little too open. You know, sometimes I'll say something really ridiculous, like, you know, I'll say to people, you know, do you watch Criminal Minds? And they say, oh, yeah, I love Criminal Minds. That's great. I say, well, you know, it's usually a man with my condition that did it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really? Yes. That's a great selling point. Well, what I mean by that is that Criminal Minds really leans too heavily on borderline personality disorder.
Right.
You know, people with borderline personality disorder are far more likely to hurt themselves than other people.
Exactly.
Yeah, far more likely to hurt themselves. But it, you know, it's one of those sort of it makes people stop and laugh nervously. So I do have a little bit of fun with it for my sins.
So they put the padlock on the door.
Yeah. Put a padlock on me. But you know, the whole thing has been a real brilliant eye opener, and people have been fantastic day in, day out. I can have I got time to briefly tell you a story?
Yes, we have about 6 minutes.
Excellent. Right. I was walking towards this place called Crimond in the northeast of Scotland. And this guy drew level with me in his car and he said, what are you doing? So I told him what I was doing. He said, I'm going to give you a lift. I said, no, that's not how it works. He said, right. He said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Crimond. He said, OK, well, I'll see you there. I live there. He said, maybe I'll see you there. So I walked to Crimond, which was 10 miles up the road, and I was quite tired by the time I got there. And there's this guy, Kenny. He was just standing on a green, the village green, and he sort of claps his hands together. He says, so what do you do now? I said, well, what I normally do, sometimes if I've got money, I'll stay in a bed and breakfast. Sometimes I'll put my tent up, or sometimes I'll stay in somebody's house if they're willing to put me up. He said, right. He said, well, I can't put you up because I've only got one bedroom. He said, but you can come to my house for tea and you can put your tent up in my garden. So I said, great, that's fantastic. So I went to his house for tea. This man I'd only once met, and suddenly he's invited me into his home and he's feeding me fish sticks and chips. So I went back to my tent, and then in the morning there's a little knock on my tent and he says, Chris, I've made you tea and toast. How does that sound? And I said, that sounds fantastic. And he said, I've got to go to work now. Bye. And I'm thinking, gosh, that's hit and run kindness. But as I was sitting in the tent, I suddenly realised I wasn't just in his garden. In Scotland, they've got things called communal drying areas where people hang their clothes out to dry. And this was an area that was owned by, say, five houses. And I was absolutely nowhere near his back door, but I was about 5 feet away from his next-door neighbour's door. And I'm thinking, oh, God, what am I going to do? So I thought, right, I'm going to take my tent down. I'm going to run away because I'm brave like that. And this woman, who's about 60, opens the door and she said, and I thought she was growling at me or sort of looking at me in some hostile way. So I'm really sorry. Kenny said it was okay for me to camp here. I'm on the way. It'll take me 2 minutes to get my tent down. I'll be away. And she said, sorry, what? I said, Kenny, you're next to neighbour. And she said, listen, I'm not interested in any of that. She said, I've run you a bath. I was wondering if you wanted any bubbles in it.
Oh.
And bubbles would be nice.
Oh my gosh.
But you know, you talk to people up and down the country and you say to them, what would you do if somebody put their tent up in your garden, you know, and they hadn't asked and it just appeared, what would you do? And most people would phone the police.
And most people would not say, do you want bubbles or not?
And she was, you know, she's just a fabulous person. And we got chatting. She'd been caring for a friend of hers who'd recently died. And she said, you know, I'm finished with caring for folk now. And I said, really? You've finished caring for folk? You've just invited a complete stranger into your house, run him a bath, given him breakfast, more breakfast. People keep feeding me. It's awful. And sent me on my way. And you know, she was just, it was just one of those marvelous, lovely experiences. So,
and you've had 4,000 miles worth of these experiences, right?
4,000, easily. Yeah. Day in, day out, people are fantastic. You know,
so
it doesn't matter.
What's the ultimate goal then? What is the I have done it?
I'm walking from Edinburgh to Edinburgh. So I went up the east coast of Scotland, across the north, down the west. I danced around a few of the islands, which is an absolute hoot, but that's a story in itself. And then down the west coast of England, around Wales. Wales has been fantastic. It's beautiful. The people are delicious. You know, it's just great. And then I'll walk around the rest of England, back up into Scotland, and then that'll be me done and dusted and wondering what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. But there's a film
being
made. I think
you'll probably know by then.
I think I'll have some kind of clue, yeah.
So, what's the timeline look like?
If I can keep my mental health good, then it'll be great. I'm looking to start back sometime in spring. I'm going to have an event in my hometown called Corby. We're calling it Walk a Mile Rebooted. And I'm going to invite a lot of the people who took me into their homes. And a friend of mine's bought a community centre, so we'll be able to put up a lot of people. We'll have a lot of like-minded people who'll be able to talk about where they want to go with Walk a Mile, because it's not just mine. It belongs to all these other people too. You know, so I'd like it to become a charity, like a sort of almost like a business. And I'd like it to become bigger and bigger. And you know, I want to do more talks and all that kind of stuff. But I'd like you know, to work with other people. So I've invited as many people as I can to this event, which may last perhaps 2 days, 3 days, to try and sort of take it all forward. So come springtime, I'm going to be fitter and lighter than I was, because I've just become incredibly unfit over this year. And by springtime, I should be good to go. And what better way to do it than have a whole bunch of people behind you, working with you and pointing you in the right direction.
And when are you planning on doing this?
Spring. I haven't got an exact date. I was aiming at my birthday, March the 6th. Don't get me anything big. Just make sure it's expensive. but it'll probably be after that. I'd be aiming probably April. In an ideal world, it would be April the 6th, because that would be the anniversary of when my mum died. And mm-hmm. and that's a really important date to me. It's a date. It's kind of like Christmas for me. It's really weird. I feel really good on that day, because I feel like I'm really connected with her. And you know, it's just I just have that kind of really weird, wishy-washy, flowery feeling. So that would be a great time. Around the beginning of April would be good for me.
Well, from one Pisces to another.
Hey, there we are. I knew there was a connection.
March 1st.
March the 1st. Okay, so do you want something expensive or large?
Expensive.
Okay, good. I'll see what I can steal. Well,
you need to keep me informed about your big event.
I will.
Fly over and we can celebrate together.
Do you know, I'd love to do this in the States, but yeah, I wonder how it would work.
Oh, I will fly to you.
You'll fly to me? That'd be great, yeah.
That would be awesome.
Come to Corby in the springtime. There's no finer place.
Well, so we just have one more minute, Chris. But
yeah,
leave us with some final thoughts here in the last minute.
I guess for me, being diagnosed with this awful mental health problem, it's not the end of the world. You know, there's so many possibilities out there. You know, I might not be what people might consider employable, but there is so much you can do even with a mental health problem, because very often it's cyclical. It's not something that stays with you all the time, you know, and an awful lot of the time, you know, you can make very valid contributions to the world.
Which you were doing right now,
yeah,
and will do, yeah, in 2015. So cheers to 2015. We only have two
absolutely
more weeks left in 2014.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, 2014 really could have tried harder.
I couldn't agree more. Chris, thank you for coming to us all the way.
Thanks for having me on. That's great.
I love having you on. I hope that we can do it again for sure. And keep us posted about your big event.
Yeah, I will. I'll keep you up to date.
And tell us again what your handle is on Twitter.
It's at WalkAMileUK.
Okay. And then if you want to follow him on Facebook, it's Walk a Mile in My Shoes, right?
That's right. So, yeah, what could be easier? Yeah, just join up. You know you want to.
You want to. Trust me, I joined up. I was not sorry. Chris, thank you. Love talking to you. It's always a pleasure, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Always a pleasure, Chrissy. Thanks very much.
Tell Ella I said hello.
Will do. You take care.
And thank you to my listeners today. I appreciate you tuning in to hear our story all the way from across the ocean. I always love having people with different accents just in the southern ones that you get every day from me. So I hope you have a wonderful Christmas. I will probably not be on the air next week. We will be running an archive, but I look forward to hopefully putting together a fun compilation for New Year's Day of all the highlights that we have done over the year in 2014. If I do not see you on air next week, I'll see you in 2015. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas, and be kind to one another. You've been listening to Stigma of Mental Illness Radio, where we're changing the way people view mental illness, one personal story at a time.